Hi, this is Raquel Welch. Yes, that Raquel. And I'd rather stick needles in my ears than listen to one more minute of Mr. Media Radio. Ugh.
The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to Chainsaw Al himself, internationally renowned business management expert Albert J. Dunlap. His New York Times and Business Week best-selling book, Mean Business, How I Save Bad Companies and Make Good Companies Great, has just been republished with new content and is available for the first time as an ebook and digital audio download. Stick around. This is Al's first podcast interview, and maybe his last if I screw it up. Right, Al?
Right.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, brought to you by Amazon.com, Audible.com, and 1-800-DIAL-DJs. Please stop by the website, MrMedia.com, click on our advertisers, support the show. And remember, there's more than 1,000 interviews available at MrMedia.com. We've been doing this since February 2007. Hope you'll find something you like. And thanks for listening. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience that is packed to the walls with the more than 70% of workers whose jobs were saved when Chainsaw came to their town in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. Sometime back in 1995, my agent got a call from John Mahaney, a business book editor at Random House. "You think Andelman would be interested in writing a book with Al Dunlap?" he asked. "Sure," my agent, Joel Fishman, said. Now, to himself, he no doubt muttered, he'll work with anybody at this point. I had written three small books at this point, including Why Men Watch Football, which Sports Illustrated named that week's Sign of the Apocalypse. Not exactly the makings of a long career in letters. But when I went to meet Dunlap a few days later at Scott Paper headquarters in Boca Raton, Florida, a funny thing happened. The man the business world knew as Chainsaw, because of the way he blew through bloated companies on their last legs and cut them to the core, liked me. We bonded over shared roots, both poor boys hailing from New Jersey and a shared love of dogs. And his corporate lieutenants also endorsed me. I was hired, and my career has not been the same since. Mean Business, How I Save Bad Companies and Make Good Companies Great by Albert J. Dunlap and me, Bob Andelman, was published to massive acclaim in late 1996. It was the first book ever excerpted on the front page of USA Today. It was a finalist for the Financial Times of London's Best Business Book of the Year, and it was named one of the top 10 business books ever. It also sold more than 100,000 copies and became a New York Times and Business Week bestseller. Now, Al retired a few years after Mean Business was published and spent several years living quietly between Florida and Wisconsin with his wife Judy and their German shepherds, Brit and Cadet. But over the last 10 years, the Dunlaps have raised their profile, become community builders, making substantial contributions to everything from the Mayo Clinic's cancer programs to the Florida State Seminole Boosters and from animal rescue to children's programs in their adopted hometown of Ocala, Florida. Now, you can read about the remarkable Dunlap Renaissance in the newly updated edition of Mean Business, available wherever books and ebooks are sold. And the original audiobook is now available as a digital audio download for the first time, too. So, Al Dunlap, my friend and co-author, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you very much, Bob.
Good to see you. No one-finger salutes this morning?
I'm on my best behavior today.
Okay. All right.
It isn't easy.
I know. Al, I think the big question that most people will ask is, why resurface now? Why update your story now?
Well, I think the original book had a great message for everyone in business. I think the things that we've done with our lives since then deserve to be looked at by others, and perhaps they might find things in what we've done that would be very applicable to them.
And what have you been doing these last few years?
Well, we have become very involved in charity. We built a cancer center in my wife's hometown in conjunction with Mayo Clinic, and we have become a major booster of the Seminole and the Seminole football team. And, of course, we've become enormously involved in animals, which I've always loved my whole life.
You've got like 75 rescued animals there on the ranch with you now?
We have 75 rescued animals, every one of which will live out their life on our ranch in the best environment we can give them. We have horses, cattle, sheep, goats, donkeys.
I was waiting to hear Andelmans. Okay. well, I want to come back in a few minutes to what you're doing now, but I also want to talk about the kind of the core of the Dunlap philosophy. There's always been controversy about you going back even before the book, but Mean Business is still required reading for many prominent business leaders around the world. I've seen it on business shelves everywhere I go, and even though, you know, some of them do this with the book, let me show folks. They will take the book, and you know, so here's the book, but they'll hide it to read it behind the latest issue of Guardians of the Galaxy comic books. So, you know, they'll be reading it like this. But anyway, so folks, listen, the four tenets of the Dunlap & the Corporation philosophy are this: get the right management team, pinch pennies, know what business you're in, and get a real strategy. So, Al, before we go back into talking about some of the things that you're doing now, I was hoping you could kind of explain a little bit about each of these things, starting with get the right management team. What's that all about?
It's absolutely key when you go into a corporation, particularly corporations I went into were in dire trouble. You must assemble around you the right team of people, people who are smart, people who have ability, and people who will tell you when you're wrong that that's a bad idea. The people that agree with you all the time are very dangerous to the future of the business.
You know what, let's stop on that for a minute, because this is one of the greatest lessons I took from all my years of working with you, is that if you're not willing to stand up and speak your mind to an Al Dunlap, you're really kind of useless to him or whoever you're working for, right? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but you value people being blunt with you and telling you the truth rather than just saying, yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir. That's not what you're looking for.
That's absolutely true, Bob. I've seen so many times when executives were told all their ideas were great and they weren't, and it caused the demise of the company. My executives became very trusted cohorts, and today, many of them are still my very best friends because they could say, Al, that's a bad idea.
And I think it's fair to point out that some of the guys who worked with you at Scott, for example, wound up in high positions or the highest positions in places like Campbell Soup, American Tourister. Those are the two that come to mind, but I know that
Adidas.
I mean, they've all done very well. So, have some folks, I think the answer here is have some balls. Speak your mind. Don't be afraid. And then the second thing is pinch pennies. Now, this is the one that seems very logical on the face of it, but when you're in a company that hasn't been doing this and suddenly you're told, hey, we're going to cancel your magazine subscription to a trade magazine. If you want that magazine, pay for it yourself. The company doesn't need to pay for it, for example. What is pinch pennies all about?
Well, you know, most companies get into trouble because they have a very high cost structure, headquarters and airplanes and limousines and unlimited expenditures. But it will destroy a corporation. You must watch every penny, and you must run the business very, very efficiently. And when you lose sight of cost cutting, you ultimately will pay the price of losing the company.
Now, you're a guy who appreciates, you know, living well and having nice things. But your point over the years has been, I think, that corporations don't need to do that. They need to produce. They need to create income for the shareholders, right? And they don't need to have, you know, diamond floors and super airplanes and stuff. They need to do their best to get every penny out of profit and return it to the shareholders.
The shareholders own the corporation. They take all the risk. No one ever says to a shareholder after a corporation fails, I'll give you your money back. Therefore, the executives owe the shareholders their best efforts.
Al, the third major lesson from the book is know what business you're in. What does that mean?
That means every corporation has a core business, something that they're very good at, something that has built the corporation, and that's what you should concentrate on. I do not believe conglomerates work. You cannot be good at everything. When I took over Scott, it was in all kinds of businesses, yet it was the large producer of toilet tissue and toweling in the world. We got it back to the core business and sold about 14 other businesses that were pulling the corporation down. Concentrate on your core business where you can be successful.
I'm thinking one of the greatest examples of that at the moment and for years has been actually Microsoft, a company that made its money on software and then over the years got distracted by things that it didn't do well. It tried doing an iPod-like device called Zune, which nobody liked. It did develop the Xbox, which was very popular with gamers, but the last year or so they tried to get into creating entertainment and TV studios, and they gave up on that because they have no expertise in that. That was not their core. That's the kind of example we're talking about, isn't it?
Absolutely, Bob. You know, I was at a book signing once, and a woman came up to me, and she says, well, your four key points, Mr. Dunlap, are very simple. I said, yes, they are simple. People want to make them complex. And whenever anybody explains something to you in very complex terms, they really don't know what they're talking about.
Very good. All right. And so the last of the four major lessons from Mean Business is get a real strategy. What does that mean?
Well, you know, people run corporations and they don't know where they're going to go or how they're going to get there. You have to have both a short and long-term strategy. The short-term strategy is what are we going to accomplish this year? The longer-term strategy is where will we be 5 to 7 years from now? And you have to focus on that. You have to get you where you want to go. Otherwise, you'll fall by the roadside.
Another thing that you're very famous for is being anti-consultant. Now, a lot of years have passed since I've asked you about this. I think I know the answer, but I'll ask you again. Do you still feel the same way about consultants today that you did 20 years ago?
Yes, Bob, because I feel the executives are paid to run the operation. And when you have to get a lot of consultants in to tell you what to do, you're not running the corporation. And a lot of people do that to justify what they're doing.
Okay. I know there was one consultant that you did like because he didn't do things the way the rest of them did.
That's very true. I had one consultant and his team that worked with me at numerous companies because they approached it from the aspect of a person who had a day job.
Okay. Start again. Al, how has your life changed since you were best known as Chainsaw Al?
Well, you know, the Chainsaw Al got taken quite a bit out of context. It was given to me at a party in England by John Aspinall, a good friend of Sir James, who said to my wife, you're like a chainsaw. You cut the fat away from a corporation and leave a great sculpture. It got taken out of context when I got back to America like Chainsaw Al, the crazy killer.
And you kind of moved away from it for several years, but I understand now you've kind of embraced it again and you're proud of it.
Yes, finally I've kind of gotten over it and For a while, my mother wouldn't talk to me. She said I was Rosemary's baby.
You know, there's people who are going to eat this up. And, you know, I want to point something out, folks. If you've never seen Al talk before, this is just the way he is. I mean, you know, he just his wife Judy will tell you. I mean, he jokes about everything. It's not this. This is not the guy going around with a knife who's going to stab you in the back. Not now, anyway. Al,
you know, my wife is better known as Cinderella. She married Prince Charming.
That's exactly the way she described it to me. That's amazing. Well, so, Al, speaking of Judy, you guys have always loved animals. You've had the German Shepherds for years, obviously. Tell me about how you guys, when you got this land that you're on, you decided to set it up as a kind of a rescue zone for animals.
Well, you know, we've had in our life 7 German Shepherds, and we've always loved the breed. And we moved to Ocala because we could buy land here. We'd been living in Boca, which is a beautiful place, but very difficult to get land. When we came here, we ultimately enlarged our land where we now have 100 acres. And because we loved that people could no longer afford to take care of or feed. And this started very small scale, and now it's grown to the fact that we have 75 animals. And I'll tell you, when the animals first come, they're in bad shape, they're hungry. But after about 5 weeks, you can pet them, and it's a wonderful feeling to see the transformation in these animals.
So it started with Sweetie Pie, who was actually on the land adjacent to you, and I can tell the story, I think, at this point as well as you can. Judy used to go and give a carrot to Sweetie Pie every day, and when the land became available, the people who owned it were not planning to continue the horse, shall we say, and Judy made it a condition of purchase that you wanted Sweetie Pie with the land, right?
That's absolutely correct. No Sweetie Pie, no sale.
And Sweetie Pie now is in excellent shape, very healthy.
Sweetie Pie now looks like a bronze, and she's been on the cover of 2 magazines. And she, when she sees us coming, particularly my wife, she runs over and just is unbelievably loving.
And then after Sweetie Pie, what was the next rescue?
Well, my biggest rescue was Hannibal. Hannibal is a white donkey. Hannibal was in kind of rough shape. And now Hannibal has a beautiful body. And when he sees me coming, he goes, yeah. And I go, yeah. We have a special relationship.
If I told that story, no one would believe it until they saw you actually do that. And so, I mean, also, I mean, over the years, so Hannibal's the donkey. There've been other donkeys. You've got I don't want to say bison, but
sheep.
Sheep. What else?
Cattle. Black Angus. We have sheep. We have goats. Miniature horses. Regular the donkeys.
And you've got ducks out there too, right? I know you like to go every morning and buy bread for the ducks.
Yes, we have ducks, and we have a swan, and I go out there and feed them.
Mm-hmm. And your involvement with the animals there has not been limited to the ones on your farm. You also got involved with the Marion County Sheriff's Department and their canine unit, correct?
That's a very interesting question. When we first moved to the area, we were looking for property, and one of the places we met a young deputy with a German Shepherd. And I said, can I pet the dog? He said, yes. And he said, if you move me, I'll take you to the train. About a month after we moved here, we picked up the newspaper, and the young man had gotten killed. And we bought the dog he had so it could go to the family and replaced it with another dog to the sheriff's department. And that started a series where we have bought 5 canine dogs for the sheriff's department. And one night we came home, and it was kind of dark, and I saw 2 sheriff's dog property, and I got very concerned. And I walked up to them, and I said, fellas, what's wrong? And they had a big laugh, They said, we just wanted to bring over Jack, was a dog we had just purchased for them, who made his first collar.
Oh, excellent. And I know the last time I was up, one of the deputies came by with the with one of the dogs and kind of showed us the incredible training. It's really remarkable.
What these dogs do for the community is almost beyond just the multitude of things they can do. We tend to take it a little bit for granted, but they're wonderful people and the men that take care of them.
One of the other interesting changes in you, certainly that I've seen, and I think most people who've known you have seen, has been your interest in children. And I'm thinking part of that came from your assistant and his family. They're children. You've been around them all their lives, and you have a very special relationship there. You also have gotten involved with the Sheriff's Department, I think, at Christmas time, sponsoring a big Christmas party for the kids.
They're two very interesting. John Thornton, who's Andrew played security many, many years, has two marvelous little children, and they're just smart and they're great little athletes, and we've encouraged them. And then at Christmas time, about 6 years ago, we decided that we would hold the party in conjunction with the Sheriff's Department for the 100 most disadvantaged children in Marion County. We have a whole day. We have a Santa Claus. We have a movie. We have food. We have gifts. They get to go out and then go on the helicopter and see the dogs and all the sheriff's cars. And I'll tell you what, they come, they're very downtrodden. They're not going to have a Christmas. But by the time they leave, they get a bag of gifts that's so big somebody has to help them. And we give them extra food for their family. And I don't care how tough you are, by the end of that day, you are moved.
What do you think changed in your view about children? I'm thinking that you were just so busy in the corporate world for so many years that maybe you just didn't see children the same way maybe other people did. But once you stopped and took a look around and you had retired, it was different, right? Something was different.
Well, I was traveling so much. I lived in 17 states, 3 countries, been to 39 countries. I'd be in the office very, very early in the morning to very late at night. And my life was totally absorbed in work because I always felt I had to accomplish something because I was born a poor, tough, inner-city kid whose mom only went to fifth grade and only went to ninth grade, and I felt I had to justify the opportunities they gave me.
Well, now, speaking of schools and young people, a little older than the young children we were talking about. Another one of the biggest changes in your life for the last couple of years has been the shift in charitable giving. You've given more than $10 million directly out of your pocket to Florida State University, and that in turn attracted an additional $5 million in state matching funds. That money has gone to an outdoor practice facility first, then an indoor practice facility, which opened at the beginning of FSU's national championship run, and then also money that went to the creation of the Albert and Judith Dunlap Student Success Center at Florida State University. So the question is, what drew you to Florida State? I mean, you had no ties with this school. You didn't attend that school.
I graduated from West Point, but that is the most asked question I get. Why your strong relationship with Florida State? I was on a speaking tour many years ago, and I was speaking at Harvard and Yale and Princeton and all the Ivy League schools, and someone said to me, would you speak at Florida State? So I said, where's that? So I went there, and my opening joke was, gee, you have classrooms. I thought you just had athletic facilities. I figured that was it. They'll never invite me back. But I saw the quality of the students and the quality of the administration. And at that point, I met Bobby Bowden, the coach. And my wife and I were so impressed that we decided we want to be affiliated with this great university. And over the years, I have an honorary doctorate, and Judy has one also. And my wife gave the commencement address last year.
Okay, I wanted to ask you about that. She gave a great speech. You can see some of it online. But the part that everyone seems to remember and talk about, and I don't know if it was scripted or not, but what is it that Judy said somewhere in the middle of the speech? She addressed the football program.
It was actually brought the whole place, like 15,000 people, to their feet. We got it for you. Now, no more excuses. We want a national championship and to win viral.
Al, unfortunately, Skype ate half of what you just said about that. So I'm gonna ask it again. And
what didn't they like?
Well, it garbled the beginning of the story. So let me ask you the question again. Okay. Let's see. Judy gave this great commencement speech, which people can see online, parts of it. But she brought down the house when she addressed the football program. Tell people what happened there.
Well, it was very interesting. It wasn't scripted, but about midway between the commencement address, and we had about 15,000 people there, Judy said, Jimbo, the coach, you know, you wanted an indoor practice facility. We've now built it for you. I don't want any more excuses. We want a national championship. And everybody stood up and cheered and clapped. My God, he delivered a national championship. You don't mess with my wife.
No, you do not. On top of it, I mean, she became this big YouTube video star because that was shown over and over again. Thousands and thousands of people watched that little clip.
She gave a magnificent commencement. Address won the day. It was the biggest thing in any commencement address ever.
Mm-hmm. All right, and so let's talk. So that's the athletic side of your involvement at FSU. Let's talk about the academic side. You and Judy also endowed an entrepreneurial building. Tell us what that's about.
Yeah, you know, we felt that Florida State didn't really have a place for people to come and interview the students or for them to prepare. So we built the Albert and Judith Dunlap Student Success Center right in the middle of campus. It's about a 55,000 square foot building. And what it does, it teaches leadership, which we believe passionately is desperately needed in our country. And it teaches community service and also helps these young people get jobs. It shows them how to prepare for interviews. And there's all kinds of computer equipment there. And we are very proud to know it is the most visited building on campus.
Very nice, very nice. And as someone who's got a kid going there, I appreciate that as well. And in Wisconsin and also Jacksonville, it changed the subject a little bit, you guys have gotten involved with the Mayo Clinic on the medical side. You've provided funding for cancer centers. Why Mayo and why, you know, why cancer?
Well, we started going to Mayo Clinic, and they are just fantastic. And we decided, you know, I worked in Judy's hometown company there for 8 years, and decided that Mayo had bought a hospital there, and they wanted to build a new cancer center. And we partnered up with them and built the Albert and Judith Dunlap Mayo Cancer Center, which is a remarkable place. And there are gardens around the cancer center so that people would have things to look at that would be refreshing. Gardens. Judy's mother's name, and she liked the garden. She was a wonderful woman. And I'd read this book where daughters grow up like their mothers. Not necessarily true, but she was a wonderful woman. She built this cancer center. And every time Judy goes out there, people just want to talk to her. And they thank her for the fact that they can get treatment where they can be with their family, their own home. And it's a wonderful.
And folks, somewhere off to the side, Judy's just shaking her head going, I can't believe I put up with this stuff from this guy.
The woman has been blessed with me for 46 years. A total blessing.
Right. That's exactly what she said to me. Exactly. You, you and Judy have been giving away a lot of money over recent years, and there's kind of a growing philosophy in there. We know that Buffett and Gates, they've been giving away a lot of money. You've been giving it away now. Why give it away now while you're still alive, as opposed to just leave it in a bequest, after?
That's an excellent question. Judy and I sat down and said, what would we like to do with some of the wealth that we've been fortunate enough to earn? And Judy said, we should be involved with things while we're living so that we can see the effect they have, and we can get joy out of seeing other people participate. And that's what we've done. To see a poor child or a patient in a hospital or a kid in college, it's a great feeling, and it makes you feel good, and you get a lot more out of it than you.
Very good. All right, so let's hit one more topic, and then we'll kind of wrap it up. I want to come back to the topic of the book itself, Mean Business. Do you ever regret writing it? You could have, before you wrote the book, you could have rested on your laurels and probably avoided a lot of criticism that kind of came your way over the years. Have you ever thought, well, maybe I shouldn't have written it, maybe it was more trouble than it was worth?
No, Bob, in the first place, the price of leadership is criticism. If you're going to lead, you will be criticized. Want to be like, get a dog. I got two. It's my... But of all the things I've done in my life, I've run 9 multi-billion-dollar corporations. I've been an international guest speaker with Joel Schwarzkopf and Mikhail Gorbachev. But all the things I've done in my life, the most enjoyable, the most rewarding thing I've ever done in my life was write the book and share with other people the things that I had learned and what might help them. Of course, I have a great co-author, a fellow named Bob Andelman, I think was.
Heard of that guy. I think he wrote a football book. All right, our last question. How do you want to be remembered in the future? How do you want people to remember you and your legacy?
I think I'd like to be remembered as a person who stood up for what he believed, did the right thing, wasn't afraid of criticism, and created a lot of good things for other people and brought wealth to the shareholders, and of a poor, tough, inner-city kid who made his parents proud.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, folks, listen, you can find Al Dunlap's book, Mean Business, How I Save Bad Companies and Make Good Companies Great, in great bookstores everywhere, or you can order it right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. And if you've seen the show before, you know if you're watching on Mr. Media, just below the video, probably over here or maybe over there, under Al there, is the cover of the book. You can click on it right now. Amazon will get it to you via drone in 30 minutes or less, or you can have it shipped to you overnight or within 2 days. You can also get it on your Kindle, and soon it'll be available on the Nook and other e-book readers. And finally, the original audiobook, which was only out in audio cassette when it first came out 20 years ago, is now available for digital download. So if you use audible.com, for example, you can go there and order it and download it, and you can have it instantly. And Al will actually read his book to you. That's the benefit there. You can hear Al reading the book to you. Al's got a website.
And you can turn me off if you don't like me.
We've all been known to do that on occasion, yes. So Al's got a website, too. It's meanbusinessbook.com. If you have trouble remembering that, you can also just go to chainsawal.com. That'll take you to the same place. If you're on Facebook, there is a Mean Business Book Facebook fan page. You can go there and like it, and you'll get all the updates on what Al is doing and Judy. And Al, I'll say it publicly, it's been a tremendous ride for me. I've enjoyed working with you. I've enjoyed your friendship. I've enjoyed the jokes. I've enjoyed getting the one-finger salute periodically. you and Judy have been great, and Sean and Anne-Marie, and I just wanted to publicly say thank you for that, and thank you for joining us today on Mr. Media.
Thank you for being a great professional and my friend. I salute you.
Absolutely.
It's the Mark and Lowell Show.
Hi, this is Mark.
And this is Lowell. And if you're fans of Don and Mike, you may know who we are.
Our number one interns. You've met them on the show. They're the guys that ate all the junk, and they were outside with each other holding hands with a sign that said that they loved each other wearing the dunce caps.
And what you may not know is that we started out as fans back in their WAVA days.
Hi, Don and Mike. It's Mark and Lowell.
Oh, yeah. Hey, these are two guys that we once actually called them our proteges, didn't we?
And now we have our own show, so we want you to give it a shot.
Just check us out at the Realm Network, realmnetwork.com, or you can go to markandlowell.com.
Resistance is futile. It's the Mark and Lowell Show.
Every Tuesday and Thursday evenings right here on the Realm Network. And catch the Poor Premium Show Friday nights. Just a Minute with Joe Ardinger.
Like most people living in California, I'm deluding myself that I have the flu. But we all know it's really radiation from Fukushima. Or just the flu.
To hear the rest of this minute, to sample Joe's other minutes, and to subscribe to his newest ones, visit RealmNetwork.com. That's RELMNetwork.com. Just a Minute with Joe Ardinger, another great Realm Network production. Wednesday afternoons, right here on the Realm Network.
The preceding presentation was brought to you by the Realm Network.